Take my headphones off, actually. Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Great Things with Great Tech. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and this podcast is all about highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. And in this episode, I'm really happy to be talking to Samira Tolo, Chief Technology Officer and founder at Elbate. Welcome to the show, Samira.
Thanks, Anthony. Really great to be here. Always a pleasure to be talking about the technical side. When being a founder, it is a different journey. Looking forward to this discussion.
Yeah, let's get into it. And, you know, it's a booming world this week, crypto. So this is what we're going to be talking about in this episode, some great technology around blockchain, around offering marketplaces. It's just a great time to be talking about blockchain and cryptocurrency in general. But before that, just want to plug the show. If you love Great Things with Great Tech and would like to feature on future episodes, you can click on the link in the show notes or go to launch.gtwgt.com and register your interest. Now, all episodes of GTWGT are available on the YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed, please click below. Very important. Or go to your favorite podcast platform, search for GTWGT or Great Things with Great Tech, and listen on Apple, Spotify, whatever takes your fancy. And with that, Samira, let's get into Elbate. Firstly, I think what I want to mention up front is just the fact that we've got a special thing going between Great Things with Great Tech and Elbate. So if you head to elbate.io/r/GTWGT or click on the QR code that's going to appear there, get started with a platform of $5. It's basically free money to get you started on your crypto journey, right? So please head there. We'll link it again and we'll talk about it at the end. With that, Samira, let's talk about Elbate. And just for the people out there, just let us know what Elbate is, when it was founded, and then talk about the build of the company.
Yeah, great. So Elbate is a world first type of exchange. So basically what we are is a non-custodial peer-to-peer cryptocurrency exchange. So really what that basically means is that we do not hold any cryptocurrency at any point. What we do have is a marketplace for buyers and sellers to purchase or sell cryptocurrency and also other digital assets. If they don't just necessarily have to be cryptos. Okay. It's really for the buying into the market and buying out of the market in a secure and safe way. Mm-hmm. So would you like us to talk about some of the reasoning behind why we created Elbate?
Yeah, I think so. It's really interesting. Let's go back a little bit, because I think there's a very, very big differential point here about what you guys do versus other exchanges, right? So you guys hold no crypto. You hold no wallets in as part of your service, right? It's a marketplace. Now, this was that, and that's a fundamental shift, right, from other exchanges that I've seen, not only in Australia, but around the world. But in terms of the founding, yourself and your brother, Mortaza Tolo, co-founded the company around about end of 2017. Maybe just talk a little bit before we get into the details of how the company came about and why you started it.
Yeah, so really, why Elbate was created, it was because my co-founder, Morty, he was an avid cryptocurrency trader, and he had been burnt really by the exchanges. A few of the exchanges that he was using, they were hacked. He was left uncompensated. So here's a real use case of some of the problems that can come occur from the traditional cryptocurrency exchange models. Yeah. And so based off his experience being burnt in that way, created really kind of just took a step back and really understood why was Bitcoin even a big deal in the first place. And it was the fact that it was a peer-to-peer type of technology, right? And it's supposed to encourage ownership, a dispersed ownership, instead of a centralized kind of methodology. Yep. So that's really why peer-to-peer for him was something that made sense. And we really, truly believe that this is the exchange model of the future. More and more we are seeing that exchanges are getting hacked. And if they are not getting hacked, the actual infrastructure costs to keep them secure is becoming more and more expensive. And so there's trouble on both sides, really.
Yeah, and I can see exactly why that is. I mean, even from the start, I'll be honest and upfront with the listeners and you. I've dabbled small amounts in crypto. I should have done more, like most people. I was one of those guys. I'm very risk averse, but I think I was the fact that there was so much uncertainty around digital online wallets, the hacks that happened. I mean, Mt. Gox, and there's so much history that makes this just really bad. When things go wrong, people lose a lot of money. And then when you see the value of Bitcoin and all the cryptos that have gone up over the years, it just gets worse and worse to know that you potentially lost all of this potential paper money, right? I also kind of go, you know, what it means in terms of the value of the actual coins that are out there. I mean, something like Bitcoin, I think from memory, only has 21 million ever coins are going to be produced, right? That means that when something happens to those coins, they get lost. So something gets hacked or lost, it's gone forever, which in some ways kind of works to the scarcity angle as well in terms of why the value comes into it, why people are trying to work out the value of this thing. But security is so important. When you're looking to put money in that you want to receive something out of, you know, not just gamble it away, you want to make sure that you're doing it in a secure fashion. So the peer-to-peer way is really interesting. And, you know, I think the fact that you don't hold any wallets is a really interesting component of that. So just talk a little bit about how traditional exchanges hold the wallets, what they do, and versus what you guys do with your peer-to-peer setup.
Yeah. I guess actually before we get into that, I'd like to talk about just the industry and really kind of the negative effects of irresponsible exchanges, right? So this new technology, Bitcoin and all the other cryptos, it had a huge hype and a huge, huge adoption very, very quickly, very rapid, right? And so the services that come along with that, you can imagine they probably were not fit for purpose. Mm-hmm. They were probably immature and also just really kind of using legacy methods that probably just don't make sense for the crypto world. And that is what I attribute to the decentralized exchange methods. And so that does, whenever an exchange does get hacked, it has a huge negative impact for the industry as a whole. Yeah. And for all those crypto evangelists that want to see this actually become mass adoption, every one of those hacks is a negative for the industry as a whole. So it is a problem that not only financially, but also really just the adoption of blockchain. It just delegitimizes the whole thing.
Yeah.
So with Elbate, we like to call ourselves really just a fit for purpose exchange. It's not using the exchange methods of Wall Street, right? It makes sense for traditional assets like that, but for crypto, it doesn't because of that security risk that arises.
Yeah.
So with Elbate, really what we do is it's a marketplace for buyers and sellers. And our service is essentially we have an escrow bank account, an Australian escrow bank account. So really the first step in this whole transaction is the buyer will send us their Australian dollars in our secured Australian bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we are leveraging off bank grade security, right?
Yeah.
So that's leveraging off that. And so we will not release your Australian dollars to the buyer until we have verified through the blockchain that transaction has been made to your specific wallet.
Okay.
So once we verify that transaction has been made to your wallet, only then will we release your Australian dollars into the seller's bank account.
Right. And that is just before you, that is fundamentally different to anything that I've ever used. When I'm going to other exchanges like Coinbase, Bitrex, whatever it is, all the major ones that are out there today, I've got to have money taken off me straight away. And it's either a credit card, which is very, 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 you know, I guess it's inconvenient in a way that you have to use credit cards, and for us as Australians as well. So we can't easily pump money in or take money out of these exchanges. But to know that money's gone into that account, into Bitrex, whatever it is, and then I can buy stuff and then I can make purchases. This is fundamentally different, right? Because you're taking out the risk of something going wrong or something happening in the middle effectively as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that escrow functionality is both a protection for the buyer and the seller. So the benefits that the seller can receive from this is they are receiving funds from a verified Australian bank account. And mm-hmm. so their own personal bank account will not be at risk, because as we've seen as Australian consumers of crypto, sometimes your bank account does get shut down if it is associated with a crypto related transaction, especially if it is a dodgy type. But for us, we have a great relationship with our banking partner, where in that our sellers, they are rest assured that their bank account will be safe. And then so the benefit for the buyer in this case, as you had pointed out, is if there is something that goes wrong in the middle, we can simply refund their money back.
Okay.
And that is for them.
And how often does that happen? I mean, is that a common occurrence, or is it more, I mean, obviously I don't think it happens all the time, but does it happen? And in what instance could that happen? Is there an example you could kind of talk about?
Yeah. So, we really kind of protect everybody in these scenarios. So one reason that we would refund the money back is that the seller they took too long to send their crypto.
Okay.
And so the buyer's complaining, going, yo, the price has changed too much, I'm not happy with this, can we please do something about it? And then we have an investigation with the seller, why did it take so long?
Yeah.
And then we proceed from that, but that is a possible reason that we have seen in the past.
Okay. And I guess when you say it's a marketplace, I have actually logged on and taken a look. So effectively the sellers set a price or a price range. Is that kind of what they're able to do in the marketplace and say, I want to sell X amount of BTC between X and Y, and then they put it out there and someone goes, yep, I want to buy that at X. Can you do that? And then the seller goes, yeah, no worries. Let's start the transaction. Is that basically how it happens?
Yeah, but it's not really a manual way that you've kind of described it. It's a lot more automated. So
that's good. We love automation, so that's good that it's automated.
yeah. So the communication between the buyer and seller is limited, because what we wanted to do is not have the risk transferred between the two. So yeah, if anything does go wrong between their communications, that's another added risk, right? So where we've automated that whole process, where the buyer will just click on the price that they see is great, mm-hmm. And then they purchase that amount, and there goes happy days.
Okay, good stuff. And I guess with that, a lot of the overheads and processing that comes with storing a wallet in an exchange, that in itself, like you mentioned efficiencies of a business, of an exchange like that, apart from the security and all that, the infrastructure to store that, obviously, you know, maybe 5 years ago was less, because obviously the change when it's big, the processing power, is that a consideration as well that you guys had? The fact that you can't really do this efficiently today unless you've got tons of capital behind you or something else, because there is so much complexity in the compute that's required to store everything. Is that a reason why as well you've gone down this path, notwithstanding the security, obviously, and the peer-to-peer?
Yeah, I mean, so the cost savings that we've seen, it's been something that we've looked at after fact. So us as a service, it wasn't the main reason that we started it, but it's been a great bonus for us. Yeah. And it's a great selling point for us that our cost infrastructure is significantly lower. And what I actually really do predict is with some of the centralized exchanges that they will have an evaluation of how they are operating, and really change the way that they do this.
Yeah, okay. And we'll talk about, you know, the disruption and innovation in the market and how you guys have obviously leading the way there. But what that means is that you guys, you know, because when you do a transaction on an exchange, you lose bits of the currency for every transaction, right? That's how they take their piece of the pie. I mean, you guys basically don't have, I mean, your fees are low to none. Just explain the differences there in terms of the withdrawal, deposit fees, transaction fees. Like, how are you guys different in that sense?
Yeah, so for us, because we have just essentially broken down a really cumbersome process into a really simple 1 to 2 step process, it means that there are less steps for both buyers and sellers. And so we don't have withdrawals. We don't have deposits. So therefore you don't have these fees. So fewer steps means fewer fees, and for the seller, zero fees at all. It's completely free to sell on Elbate. Okay. You sell at your own price, which is not seen widely with some of the available services.
Yeah.
You do face a few fees when you are selling, and not only just blockchain fees, but the exchange fees as well, and multiples through that journey. So yeah, that's one of the other benefits that we have, is we've just simplified this whole process down where it's broken down into 2 steps, really.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. And then in terms of the, like you guys are utilizing some sort of blockchain technology to do some heavy lifting, right? So just explain a little bit how you leverage blockchain at a very kind of superficial level, because obviously it's complex in a way. We don't want to get into the whole, you know, talk about blockchain and how it works, because that we could probably take 2 or 3 hours doing that, right? But yeah, how are you leveraging it at a very high level?
So we're quite proud of the way that we use blockchain technology. We do not have a blockchain. That is not a service that we are doing. Again, having your own blockchain is also, especially at enterprise level, it's also a very, very expensive process to be involved in. So we're not a blockchain. What we do is actually connect to the Bitcoin, the Ethereum, and all of the other blockchains that are already out there, that are already supported. We connect to them and we verify transactions that happen on those blockchains relevant to the coin that is being transacted.
Okay. So that's almost like, you're basically doing what a blockchain was meant for, you know, effectively verifying transactions, making sure they're legit, and it obviously never changes and becomes immutable. So you're doing what it was for. And I think it's, you know, the whole concept of the blockchain has been taken over by crypto, right? And it's all about the money and the store and the value in it. But the underlying technology for different elements is really cool as well. So in terms of, you know, you guys just don't trade digital currency, but you've also got all digital assets. You do gold, silver. Like, how does that work when you're transferring those sorts of physical assets? I'm interested in that.
Yeah, so the gold and the silver partnership that we had was quite a unique one. It was something that we wanted to be really heavily involved in, just to showcase that cryptocurrencies are not the only things that are being that the blockchain is being used for.
Yeah.
So with this gold and silver partnership that we have, I shouldn't say partnership, but more the coin that we do offer. So they have a unique history. So they were a bullion provider themselves for many, many number of years, quite a well-known one in Australia. And what they wanted to do is simplify the process of buying into gold and silver and really make it more accessible for everybody, instead of getting them to come into their physical stores and have all these signatures and processes happen. Yep. What they've done is put it onto the blockchain, where they verify that each coin is a representative of a real gold or silver bullion.
Okay. So you're basically digitizing and revolution, well, effectively revolutionizing something that was done manually, very paper-based, and you're basically ripping it into the 21st century based on blockchain technology. That's really cool there. So it's not just all about the Dogecoins and the Reddit coins. It's about some legitimately, you know, traditional ways to hold value as well in gold and silver. And DeFi, I know DeFi is part of it as well. That's like, that stands for decentralized finance. Is that what DeFi stands for? Or just, and that's kind of the whole concept of the blockchain. When the blockchain white paper, and I haven't read, I downloaded it once and I was going to read it. And I was like, you know what, it's just too heavy for me. But I believe that, you know, in that paper, that's what it was all about, decentralization. So how do you know, in terms of LBAIT, how are you guys helping that in terms of digital assets, DeFi and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so with something, one thing that we also really made sure to do is that we are not tied to a single blockchain. And we did that so that we have the flexibility to, because what we predict is that there's going to be a lot of innovation in this space continuing to happen. And so we wanted to be flexible in the way that we've built our system to quickly be able to adopt all of these new methods, right? And so with this DeFi movement, we were one of the first exchanges to offer DeFi coins. And that's just a testament to how we've created our infrastructure, and that we can just quickly plug and play into the latest services that are available.
Yeah, makes sense. So let's go back. Let's change tack a little bit, because I did want to talk about the general Bitcoin mania that's gone ahead. Like initially we first talked, I first met you late last year, and we're like, I've got to get you on the show because I think it's just going to be a great discussion from a technical perspective. And then it's like, let's do it in January. Because it's like, I thought the first little ramp up for Bitcoin happened in January, where it went from, you know, previous lows, I think it was still in the 10s or 11s, and it went up to 30K. And then it's kind of started to go down. I thought, okay, the bubble's gone, we're going to miss the opportunity. And then lo and behold, all of a sudden this week, it's just gone mental again, right? I mean, it went mental last week with some altcoins while Bitcoin was doing whatever. And, you know, all that sort of anti-Wall Street movement was kicking in, and Dogecoin got lifted and a few others. But Bitcoin this week, I think what happened this week legitimizes the whole concept of crypto. Like what effectively happened with Tesla is they converted 10% of their total cash stock into Bitcoin, right? So institutional investors are pumping a lot more money. Now, I've done a lot of reading where you've got hedge funds, you've got bank institutions, and, you know, private equity firms. They're converting cash reserves into digital currency because I think they see more value in it than what they're going to get from holding it in their bank traditionally, especially the way interest rates are. But what's your take on the craziness? I think last I checked, Bitcoin was at $46,000. That might have changed. Who knows? It goes up and down so crazy. But just explain to me why you think this has happened now with the institutionalized investment.
Yeah, so this institutional wave is a very interesting, and as you said, it legitimizes this technology and kind of cements the position of crypto in general. So my kind of, as an exchange provider, what you look at when these sorts of things happen is actually you go, okay, well, how are we able to support these kinds of activities? Because what we do predict is more and more institutional players will come into, will start their activity in this. And so similar to the hype of the everyday consumer, them requiring a service, these institutional players, they will also need a specialized service that caters for their needs. And so institutional players, their concerns more and more increasingly will be security. How do they make sure that conversion of their cash is actually converted into cryptocurrency?
Because we're not talking about small fry here, right? Like that Tesla number was like $1.5 billion. Like that's institutional investment. And you're right, when you're talking about that money, the risk in shifting it from one particular currency format to another or a holding format that has value, you want to make sure that you've got the right steps along the way. And if there's any suggestion of that money being lost in the ether, that's got to be risky. So I completely understand what you're saying, is that something like what you guys are doing, peer-to-peer, do that in a way where you can facilitate that marketplace, make it legitimate end-to-end and not hold the wallet, I think works beautifully for that. The only thing that I'd say there is, you know, you guys have got to ramp up your escrow accounts to be able to facilitate the billions of dollars that might come in, right? Like that could be interesting for you guys.
Yeah, more banking partners. Definitely in the talks with it. So us as a service provider, those are one of the biggest things that we look at is the banking side. It's a point that is critical. So if you don't have that banking and that financial service cemented down properly, you're not a service at all. So yeah, for us, that banking side is an absolute priority because not only for us as a service, but really our participants, they need to be able to easily and securely plug into our service, really.
Yeah, I get that. I just thought of a couple more questions actually while I was going there. So number one, do you have a maximum sort of a max amount that someone can transfer in and go, I want to buy, you know, a million, it's for argument's sake, say $1 million. But I mean, is there a top level which you guys have to say, hey, sorry, we can't transact that, or are you kind of more open-ended? I'm interested in how that works.
Yeah, so at the moment we do not have limits. So I guess one thing that I can talk about limits is in Australia we've got this OSCO PayID service that is available amongst the banks. So if you wanted the PayID and the OSCO, that probably has its own limits.
Yes.
So just keep that in mind. If you're okay with the lag by not using OSCO, we are able to service that.
I understand. Yeah, because I use OSCO all the time and I'm just doing transfers between my bank accounts. So I use that service as well. So that's pretty cool. And also one of the other things is the one thing that I've known, I'm going a little bit on a sidewards movement here, but the one thing that I've found and I know historically is that it's so hard to pull money out of crypto. Like you've got to go through these hoops. You've got to move the actual currency, the Bitcoin or whatever the crypto is, from one wallet to another to get it to a place where you can then potentially extract it and usually into US dollars and bring it back here. So from an Australian point of view, that really simplifies that aspect of it, which I think turns a few people off, because it's all good to have this, you know, money sitting there, but then if you can't use it, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Now that you're in a great position, how do you make use of it? Exactly. And so with Australia, so something that I might add on why Australian cryptocurrency services are lacking in comparison to overseas. So Australian rules and regulations, AML policies are probably the most strict in the whole entire world.
Yeah.
And that is great. I think for an industry that is, it's important to have that the legal infrastructure to support all of this. It is important, but what it does do is it makes it increasingly hard to provide a service around all of that.
Yeah.
And even with our banks, right, we're dominated with the top four banks, whereas in other jurisdictions, they probably have 20, 50 to 100 banks that are, you know, used by the majority of the population. And so there's a more competing market overseas about some of the innovation that the banks are willing to support. So with Australia, because we have the fewer banks operating, the risk averse is also increased. And so that is why some of our services that we have available as Australians are significantly a few steps behind the rest of the world.
Okay. Yeah, and so just to clarify for maybe myself and the listeners as well, is this only in Australia? Like, do you have to be a resident of Australia to join your service, or can they get on and do the exchanges? And if they're based overseas or using a base different currency converted into Australian dollars. So is it just for Australians, or can other people around the world come and use your service?
Yeah, currently we are focused on the Australian market. I think it's a really great place to be. Security is a huge priority in Australia as a whole, as a consumer, for consumers here. So yeah, we are only focused on Australians at the moment.
Cool, good stuff. And so let's talk about security a little bit. But before that, I'm interested in the tech behind it, right? Like me, I've worked with hosting platforms and applications and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just interested in terms of how you brought the product and the service and the platform from the idea, and how you basically got to the point where you could launch it as a web-based platform. I'm really intrigued in that. So maybe without going into kind of specifics about it, maybe talk a little bit about, as a CTO, the tech that went into creating Elbate.
Yeah, so this is, I think, a conversation about entrepreneurialism and really how does a technical startup begin? Right. As I touched on earlier, it was modeled by my co-founder. He has a business background, right? And so what he needed to actually create this whole system is a co-founder with a technical background. So I was brought along there to assist with that. Now, the other issue is when you're starting a whole company, especially if it's technical, you have this concept of an MVP, a minimal viable product. Yeah. And you need this MVP to really prove to yourself, but then also future investors, that this is a product that will be used, that is necessary, and it deserves more investment so that we can actually create the sophisticated infrastructure that is required to support it at a scalable level. So for us, our journey, it was a little bit more complicated. And the complicated, the reasons why it was complicated is because our model had never existed before, yeah. Right? So it was difficult to create a true skeleton of an MVP, because it still didn't tell the full story of the whole model that we are creating. Yeah. So what we needed to do was actually build a usable MVP, so an MVP that was actually available to the public, and then use that data to then prove not only what we are doing, but also to help people understand what this model is, right?
Yeah. So it was almost like an MVP POC type of thing, right? You're trying to prove the concept with an MVP, which is challenging, yeah.
Exactly. So we had that phase, and it was great. We gathered the evidence that we needed to show that. And then from that, we spent a few more times to make all of our, so really the financial aspects of what we do. So the plug and the plays and getting the APIs really connected to all the financial, the banking services that we're using, to get all of that really cemented down, and also obviously increase our server sides as well, our hosting. So we moved from the MVP and then actually increased all of the infrastructure after that, and then launched publicly in 2019. Was our little journey.
Big turnaround, yeah. So the challenges are, and again, not getting into specifics, but the challenges I see with that is, interacting with APIs, you're talking about transactions which need to be, basically, when I say transaction, I'm talking about from your website, the marketplace, through to the API. It's like needs to be reliable. It needs to get some sort of feedback both ways. So you need to set up for resiliency, speed, low latency. So it would have been really interesting to design that. I kind of get excited about all of that technology at the back end that must have gone into that to make it so. But you've touched on security. We've talked about this, and it's one of the founding, reasons why, Elbate exists. It's to make sure that there's a secure way to do this, in light of all of the issues that happened, all the hacking. And even this week, Blockfolio yesterday, I'm not sure if you saw that. You probably saw it. Blockfolio got somewhat hacked yesterday, in terms of, it wasn't so much on the actual wallets or any of the transactions, but their messaging platform that they used to get out there was overtaken and used in a very vile way. But effectively, that meant that I deleted that app off my phone straight away. Do you know what I mean? So that was like the trust that I had and having that application on my phone just was like instantly gone. And that's what you're dealing with, right? So how has security been a focus for you? And how are you, you know, committed to this secure platform, not only now, but in the future, as maybe attacks get more sophisticated and whatnot, as you get more popular? Because when you get popular and successful, like anything, you will become a target.
Exactly. So this data security thing is not exclusive for crypto exchanges, as we know, right?
Of course, yeah.
For any online service, the responsibility of storing your users' data securely is immense and should be of the most importance. And so you can understand and appreciate the amount of effort, but also the costs that you are okay to spend to securely protect the data. So for us, our main methodology was always, do we need to store it? And if we don't, get rid of it straight away. So that's really, I guess, the higher level kind of way that we've thought about our security on data protection.
Yep. So basically what you're saying there is don't keep stuff you don't need to, because at some point it might get exposed, which is, I think, a lot of the data breaches that you see today, it's all old data that has been stored there and just kept for the sake of it, right? They haven't cleaned it or they haven't thought that it would be put to any bad use. And you always see, well, the majority of data breaches you see, everyone says, oh, this, we were breached, yes, but it was old data, so don't worry. But you still kind of worry. So you're kind of saying reduce that, take the attack surface out of it and just hold nothing. So effectively what you're saying there is, apart from some small amounts of client data and whatever, you don't have to store almost anything about the transaction, about what happened in the marketplace, about the user himself. So that's cool. So what sort of, and just very quickly on that, because this could be an episode in itself, but in terms of security, pen testing, all that kind of stuff, how do you as a CTO manage the attacks that potentially could come in and that sophistication? Do you deal with third parties yourself? Do you go ahead and actually create the vulnerability protection within the platform? I'm just a little bit interested in that.
Yeah, so for us as a fintech service, I think one of them, I kind of don't understand fintech services that don't have in-house engineering. I don't understand why that kind of relationship is even created. Just because in-house engineering, it allows you to have full visibility on what is happening with the development side, right?
Yeah.
And without you having time delays. So if you're making a new feature, you don't need to go and it's built into your practice that you'll have all of your testing done, right? Instead of waiting a month for the report to come out from your third party. So really at that standpoint, we're proud to have our in-house engineering.
So just to finish off, a couple of last questions. So how have you disrupted the market initially?
So with Elbate, really what we're hoping to showcase is three areas that we've really kind of shown a new way of doing. So really we've shown that exchanges, you do not need to hold the cryptocurrency to be a true exchange. You do not need that. And the benefits that it creates is a security for the exchange provider that gets given to both the consumers, but also the business as a whole. And then also there's the benefit of the costs are significantly reduced. I do predict that. I do predict that crypto exchanges are holding a hefty weight with that security that they are trying to really, really hold on to. And then also the market itself, I believe that exchanges holding onto crypto, it's there's a market manipulation involved in that. And so us participating in the peer-to-peer methodology and that peer-to-peer movement, we're really trying to disperse away from those silo powers.
What I'm hearing there is you're trying to legitimize this more than it was, basically. You're trying to make it more acceptable, more streamlined, and that's credit to LBAT as well. So one final question, how are you going to continually internally disrupt yourself in terms to offer more value for your customers, future customers, and to take LBAT to the next level?
Yeah, so internally, LBAT, we have a lot of goals, actually. For 2021, we're really, really excited for it. We've had the time to be in the market now, and we've formed really great relationships with other businesses and other services that we can really leverage off. And so for us, that's what we're going to focus on, is partnerships. And we're really excited. We've got a few upcoming developments happening with other financial services, and I'm very, very excited.
So watch this space. I think, I know it's funny, it's one of those situations where, you know, don't give away too much, because, you know, watch this space, and, you know, there's going to be some great things coming from LBAT. I can actually feel it, so that's great. So let's wrap it up now. So as usual, the show notes, we'll put them up there, we'll put links to LBAT, a few different things up there on the website. You can find me at Anthony Spiteri on Twitter, and we've also got GTWGT podcast on Twitter as well, and gtwgt.com. Just a reminder, in terms of that special code, it's lbate.io/r/gtwgt, or for those watching, the QR code that's popping up there. It's free money. Why wouldn't you go and have a look at this awesome way to get started in crypto locally in Australia? And once again, if you're not subscribed, or you're new to the show and you'd like to hear more, please subscribe to the podcast client or on YouTube. And with that, thank you, Samira. Thank you, LBAT. And we will see you next time.
Thanks so much. Great speaking with you.
Cheers. All right. Well, let me stop the recording.